met a lot of times over the years now at this point. You're from Transition Kerry. We're here at Tralee Bay Wetlands and you have the Bee Festival coming up. Your fourth year?
Yeah, no, we're delighted now. This is our fourth year of the Kerry Wild Bee Festival. And I suppose we are delighted this year. Every year we try and do something a bit different. So this year we're really delighted to have Professor Jane Stout. She is a lecturer on entomology and insects up in Trinity College, but she also co-wrote the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan.
Oh, cool.
So anyone who knows about the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan, and like Kerry County Council and a lot of all the local authorities around the country have signed up to it, and it's been a really brilliant resource, especially for tidy town groups and parishes and here in the wetlands as well. So it's been a really inspirational, accessible document that's getting communities to do actions for wild bees and to get people really thinking about wild bees and pollinators. So we were delighted when we asked Jane, would she come and talk? So she's coming in online, but we're going to have it in person here in the wetlands in the lovely conference room. And so that'll be at 7 o'clock on the 8th of June. And it's a free event. Anyone's welcome to come and attend. But we're having the opportunity as well to launch the Wild Bee Festival, which will actually happen in July.
Okay.
So I suppose this event, and we are going to have another little event before the festival on the 1st of July. We are going to do some planting of fruit trees.
Oh, cool.
It's the Tralee to Finish Greenway, Friends of Tralee to Finish Greenway group. And we have some, again, with some funding from Kerry County Council, some apple trees. And again, just trying to get that idea that food, that we need pollinators. Pollinators help us with our food. So they pollinate the fruit trees and that's where we get our apples, you know. So we're going to do that as a little outreach event as well. And then we have the weekend, which is the 4th and 5th of July, where we'll be having lots of lovely events over the weekend here in the wetlands.
Mm-hmm. Yes, loads for everyone. So tell me, when I think of a bee, I think of, you know, your big yellow and black bumblebee. So, but you said it's called wild bees. So what are we looking at?
Yeah. So a lot of people, I suppose that's where the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan was really good at raising awareness that there was more than maybe one bee. Often people think of bees and they're thinking of the honeybee. Mm. And we have a native Irish honeybee who's really important, does a huge amount of work for us, for not just pollination, but also produces honey. And we're lucky in Kerry, there's a lot of small-scale beekeepers. You know, they'd have a few hives and they sell a little bit of honey, which is like gold dust these days, really good local honey, because even people with maybe hay fever and allergies, they all would use, be looking for honey, local honey. So for most people, the revelation is that there's another 99 or 100 other types of bees.
Okay, I didn't even know that. I thought you were going to say at least 10, but
no,
not 100.
No. So, and of that, and I might get my figures wrong, of that, around 77 are solitary. That means they actually just want to live by themselves. There's 77 solitary bees that literally kind of want to live by themselves, and they can be anything. They could be living in... like there's ash mining bees, they live in maybe holes of sandy banks and things like that. And often people don't notice, but if you suddenly notice the little holes, there's possibly little colonies of solitary bees living there. There's a lovely colony out in Killacrahan, the woods there, and they've actually cordoned it off because at certain times of the year the bee is coming out and just, you don't want people standing on their nest.
Mm.
And they don't sting. A lot of these bees don't sting either. They just want to live a quiet life.
Just like us all.
Exactly. But then the other ones are the more, maybe the, you mentioned that, like the bumblebees. So then there's maybe around 22 types of different types of bumblebees. Mm-hmm. So when you see a big kind of bumbling bee, especially in February or so, or March, like you'll see them out and they'll be big and you'll hear them. They're the queen bee that's coming out from their winter hibernation, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's different types, and we have a lot of them in Kerry, and then there's other types that we don't have in Kerry.
Is there a reason why they're not in Kerry? Is it because, or any reason at all?
I think it depends on some habit. It's basically down to habitat. So some of them might live more on the East Coast. But most of them we have gotten here. And I suppose that's where someone like Alan Balfe, who's the education officer here in the wetlands, he carries out bee surveys every month in the summer. And anyone can come along and they're free. I think it's the last Friday of every month. It's on their website. But that's where you would start learning that some bees are more common than others and you will start getting the hang of them. Like, I'm still learning myself, you know, because you're looking at the different amount of, you know, the colours and the amount of bands they have on them.
And did you make a different kind of buzz?
They possibly have different accents, yeah. I actually don't know. They often say that birds have different accents, you know, depending on where they are. So I'm sure with bee, I'm sure the queen bees make bigger sounds. And then they're well, because they're bigger often, but the when they're working, I think they do make different sounds depending on what they're doing, because when they're going and pollinating flowers, they have different sounds to when they're just hanging around. They don't want to waste energy either, but when you hear a buzzing bee, they're usually it's because of they're flying, like, you know. So, and they're kind of made, and also if they find them, so the interesting thing with bumblebees as well is they can be out on windy kind of wet days, whereas honeybees and other types of bees and actually butterflies and a lot of insects need it to be over 14 degrees for them to be out and about. So that's why bumblebees are quite resilient, you know. And sometimes you find a bit of a wet bumblebee that's been out, they're hanging out on the underside of a, if they get caught out in a shower, you know, they get wet, but they'll go in under the leaf of a tree and then they'll come back out again when the sun comes
out. So they don't like
again.
The rain, really?
No, they don't like the rain, but they don't want to get particularly wet, but they can handle a bit of the wind and they can handle a bit of rain, but unlike maybe the honeybees will stay in until it gets, you know, the weather gets better. So
yeah, so they're not really different from us, are they, Neil?
No, and that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because we're really trying to show us Transition Kerry, and there's Tralee Bay Wetlands, but we're working with the Irish Wildlife Trust, the Kerry branch, and we've got a lot of the Tidy Towns groups are working with us as well on this and other projects. What we're always trying to get across is that all the insects, like the pollinators or all the creatures that we share our communities with, they need the same things as us. Like, they need food, water, shelter, and they live in their own communities, you know. So and that's what habitats are, I suppose. And sometimes we kind of think habitats are out there, you know, somewhere, but actually the idea with the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan and restoring habitats is if they need to be everywhere. And I think we're really lucky in Tralee, you know, because I suppose people might automatically, you know, they'd be heading maybe to Killarney and they're heading to Dingle, but I just think Tralee has just so much nature. And I suppose a lot of the work that we're doing, but it's kind of quieter nature maybe, and it's very maybe it's urban nature, which is actually really interesting, because we often think nature's in the town park, or not even the town park, it's the national parks.
Yes.
You know, or you have to go out to a special area of conservation. But what I actually love is around Tralee, you know, between places like the wetlands, there's the green, which is the town park, and they have a community garden in there which Tidy Towns are helping with now. And there's the allotments up in Moida Well and Shanakil and Rahanan. And then we've out towards Bally Seedy Woods. And then we've out towards the canal. And then there's the Greenway. And we'd call those like kind of wildlife corridors or ecological corridors. But they're actually places we walk and we want to be. Mm-hmm. But it's we're in nature, but we're sharing it with all these insects and birds and wild plants. So I think the more, even as we stand here, like, and we're looking at the old train tracks, like, you know, between Blenerville and coming into Tralee, all the lovely, you know, that's hawkweed, that's all in flower. Yeah. So when the dandelion finishes flowering, then you get this other, this is kind of a cousin of the dandelion. It's just a different one. It comes a bit later and that feeds the net, you know, that keeps feeding the pollinators. And then you'll, along the canal, there's the oxeye daisies and they're feeding the pollinators. Our own lovely common daisy, the Noni Nibbana, like, they're flowering all year round. That's what their name means in Latin, you know. Bellus perennis is beautiful all year round, and day's eye, it opens at the day and closes at night. But the daisy is really important for pollinators. Buttercups, really important for pollinators. So often it's the plants, you know, nettles, really important for certain butterflies, will only lay their eggs on nettles. And
there we are, pulling them.
I know. So what I've started saying to schools and community groups, if we could put up signs and say, this is a Gordine Feilachon, like the butterfly garden, it's not that you have to go off to the garden centre to buy the plants for the butterflies. What the butterflies want really are plants like nettles and brambles and ivy and dandelion. And there's nothing wrong with getting plants from garden centres. I do it myself. But it's the wild native plants, if we could grow them, and that is what is happening. You can see around the town, the council has been changing their mowing, and a lot of that is the work with community groups like the Wetlands, ourselves, Tidy Towns, all of us working together with the council. The no-mow May, where they're, you know, mowing the edges but maybe leaving the back bits longer.
And you're doing a bit of that here as well when I was walking in, actually.
Yeah, in the management here. And I suppose what you're trying to do is allow, like, you mow where you want to walk really regularly, you know, every week or two. But the other places, even if you can leave 6 weeks without mowing it, you get the white clovers and the red clovers. And interestingly, honeybees' tongues are shorter than bumblebees' tongues. So honeybees tend to feed on the white clover, and then the bumblebees tend to feed on the red clover. And so that's why we need a bit of all the different wild plants.
Yeah.
And then you can always have your rosemary, lavender, say, you know, your they love the herbs as well. You know, and there's a lot of, there's native trees like, you know, the rowan and the holly, and they all have flower, the hawthorn, like this year as well. It is in full bloom, and they all feed pollinators. So so I suppose the idea is that just like we need breakfast, dinner and tea, you know, and a bed to sleep at night and to be with our family, it's the same for the insects and all creatures. But I suppose the Wild Bee Festival focuses on the bees in particular. But we do, last year we had Annika, she's up in Abbeyfield, and she did a lovely talk on other pollinators, you know, because we did want to broaden the idea that it is also, you know, hoverflies, butterflies, flies, midges, but also wasps. You know, people don't tend to like wasps, but they're actually they're really important pollinators as well. So I think the All Ireland Pollinator Plan has done a brilliant job of starting with bees and getting people really think. But if you create and restore habitats for bees, chances are you are setting up habitats for other creatures, as insects as well.
It's funny, Niamh, when you were talking there, I was just thinking of a conversation I had with my niece and nephew a couple of days ago, and they're 7 and 9. And my niece says she hates bugs, and my nephew said he loves bugs. So events like this can kind of see the, for them even, just to see the importance of bugs and flies and insects and bees.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of what's happening here.
Absolutely. And it's funny you say that, because I am often, like yesterday I was in a school and I had brought a woman, Fiona Sheehy, from out west. A wasp had created a huge nest in her polytunnel last year, and she kind of let the wasps be, but in the winter the wasps, because they all die off except for the queen, she goes away and sleeps for the winter, so they abandon the nest. So she gave it to me so that I could bring it around places, so we will be hopefully having, if it's still in one piece, we'll have it at the festival. But to show, when you take it out and when you, they're all looking at it, because wasps make their nests out of wood. It's different from bees. Bees make their nests out of wax, and they have wax glands to make that, whereas wasps use wood like this.
They actually have to go out and collect bits.
They're
like birds.
They're recyclers. Yeah, they come and they eat the bits and they mix it with the kind of a glue in their mouth, and they create these works of art, like incredible. Yeah, but most people, when they think of wasps, they think, oh, they'll sting me and they run away. But like, that's at the end of the year, they're looking for a bit of sugar, and we tend to have a bit of sugar. And so sometimes that does happen. But if you actually can think that they don't, you know, they create these fabulous works of art. But like that, the children were, some of the kids were like, oh, wasps. And then others were like, oh my God, like wasp made this, you know.
Yeah.
And they were able to touch it, and they mightn't have ever had that interaction. Now, I also do, strange as it might sound, but when little insects die naturally, we do collect them so that we can show people what they look like, because usually you're looking at them and they're buzzing and people are either running away or they're trying to, if you want to know what they are, you're trying to take a photo of them.
Just like Alan, I suppose.
Exactly, yeah, because you're trying to do and Susan Brown, she gave us a tip the other day. She's in Ballyduff Tidy Towns, and she said they actually recommend that you try and video them as opposed to photographing, because it's really hard to it gets blurred, whereas with a video you can actually go back and see what it's easier to identify
And
them.
You can pause it and everything.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But and it's a skill in itself, but even if you get the hang of two or three of them, for most people to realise there's just different bees as a start. But then I could see the children yesterday, it's when they see the difference between a wasp and a bumblebee, you know, even to see them up close and to see them in the size, and you're trying to kind of inspire maybe a bit of curiosity. And even if at the beginning they're a bit like, oh, I don't like it, or they're afraid, by the end they come round. Like, you know, that I suppose it's up to us grown-ups not to, they follow our reaction.
Yeah.
So if the grown-up is saying, I don't like wasps, the kids do the same. Mm-hmm. But if we can kind of be curious even about how they're living, where they're living, and I suppose the most important thing now, like, you know, because, you know, nature and biodiversity is under so much pressure. And I know then there's other issues around climate, but then there's the whole issues around well-being. And we kind of see that they're all the same thing, that if we can restore habitats and be, you know, have, you know, when you're going for a walk and you're in a natural setting, that's why people go to the woods, they go to the sea, they go to the mountains. So we are at the wetlands. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's, I suppose that's it with the wetlands. It's an urban nature where I think it really shows people that we can have nature in what could be a concrete jungle.
Yeah.
You know, you're surrounded by willow trees here. And for some people, willow is a weed. But like there's a bird called the Keolarin Asali, the willow warbler. And she only lives, that's where she lives, is in the willow trees. Mm. And all the insects she needs is there, you know. So when you've got certain habitats or certain wild trees, it's actually calming for us. And then it's,
and all the oxygen as well, yeah. And all that as,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, cleaning the air, cleaning the soil, cleaning the water. There's all these other things that they do. Some people call them like ecosystem services, you know, where they are trying to show that, like, when there's plants, like we're looking at rushes and the bulrushes and the flag iris there, and the reeds and the lovely water lilies, mm. They're actually cleaning the water, you know, so they're recycling the water, and then the creatures that are in the water are recycling the water as well. So they filter water. Willow does the same, and a lot of these will actually help with flooding and things. So when there's a lot of water, willow soaks up water, and the roots kind of help stabilize the soil. And alder is the same, and birch. So a lot of the time, if a tree moves into your garden and you're thinking, oh, that's a willow, it's a weed, I'm going to take it out, chances are you've a wet garden. And actually, if you plant more, if you let the willow grow, it'll help with the wetness, you know.
Yeah.
So often we try and do nature-based approaches. Instead of going against nature, we're trying to work with them. Mm-hmm. And again, if you have willow is one of the first trees to produce pollen in February, and that's one of the first foods for those big bumblebees that you see coming out in the spring. Willow is one of their first foods, as well as dandelion. So mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to learn, Niamh. As yeah. you said, those dates again, June 8th, if people want to go in, and it's 7 o'clock, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah. And Sarah Nashka, free of charge, because we have some support from Kerry County Council and the Cangal Local Authority Heritage Council Fund. So we're really delighted with that support. But I suppose what we really are really delighted more than anything is the support from all the voluntary groups as well. I suppose at the weekend, when we have the different events on the 4th and 5th, we have Ballybunion Nature Group coming in to talk with us, and also Tralee Tidy Towns and Castle Gregory Tidy Towns. And they've all been working with the pollinator plan and doing a lot of work in their communities. So every year, like last year, we had Fianna Changing Tides, and we had Ballyduff, and we've had Sneem. So every year we ask different community groups to come in and share what they're doing. And then we have a conversation around that, like, what can I do in my garden? And what if I don't have a garden and I've window box, or maybe can I get involved with the local community garden mm-hmm. project, or, you know, there's so many opportunities to do things. So there'll be, and then we do a lovely ecological corridor walk. We're into the green, into the town park, and we have Tommy Collins and people from Save the Green. They always come with us on that to give us a bit of history, because we need the human story and the nature story together. And then there'll be, you know, getting to know bees, how to learn how to identify. There'll be different activities. We're delighted as well because Mary Burke, they were here 2 years ago. She has this lovely art installation that they set up in herself and a few other women, where it's called Timber, Find My Perfect Match of a Plant. So it's like a play on Tinder, but it's timber, so you can figure out what your, so it's an interactive activity that you can find out what's your perfect plant match. And she'll be there on Saturday, and
that's
then
very interesting.
Yeah, that's a bit of crack as well. I was a mushroom. Other people were like a daisy, you know. So you find your little personality of a plant. And then we have Phil McSweeney, who's a really lovely artist, and he does a lot of work, willow artwork here in the wetlands as well. And he'll be there on Sunday to do nature art with willow as well. So there'll be different activities, maybe for children and a bit of art. And then there's talks, which anyone is welcome to attend. And once people, I suppose if people register, they can always ring the wetlands to book a place, or they can register online as the events. We're getting the programme finalised over the next week, and we'll be sharing that out.
Perfect. Yeah, so keep an eye on your pages, your website and everything like that.
Yeah.
Perfect. Niamh, as always, you're so fascinating, and I could talk to you all day, but thank you so much.
Gormila Margaret, for coming, and we really appreciate you as well chatting to us about it. So
anytime, yeah. Anytime at all. Thank you, Niamh.